where innovation meets the law.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, what do young people, people in their late teens and early 20s, think about the political situation in the U.S.? We're going to talk about that today on Florida This Week as part of Radioactivity. But first, three listener comments about last Friday's program. Last Friday, we had one of the nation's top secularists on. And we also were discussing the Judge Kavanaugh hearings that took place the day before. Let's hear what three listeners had to say.
Hi there. My name is Erica Dresick. I live in Lakewood Ranch. And the one thing I'm not hearing is the big picture that with this far-right control of the Supreme Court, I think that is the goal, not a blue wave or any of that, but rather than the highest power to be getting rid of Social Security, Medicare, public schools, and, of course, women's rights. So I've not heard anyone talk about that yet.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of shenanigans going on with the Kavanaugh. He had his FBI investigation, and this woman shows up at the last minute, and Feinstein sat on it and sat on it and sat on it. So there's definitely shenanigans going on. I don't believe for it at all it was credible, but that message was parroted by all the mainstream media reading off the script. So I just think this is a travesty. Nobody should be tried in the court of public opinion, which is going on this radio show. We're hearing the way the callers are talking. He did everything he was supposed to do by law, and he was very credible, more than she was. I think that the Christian right is a very, very small minority. I don't see them as a threat at all. I see the bigger threat as being the socialist Democrats that have taken over the Democratic Party.
Teresa, I got a comment about today's show. I am a Christian, but I do not call myself a Christian anymore. I call myself a follower of Christ. I don't want to be confused when I say I'm a Christian with the what's the polite way to say it? Right-wing Christians, because Jesus said we are to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. He didn't say you have to like their lifestyle. He didn't say you have to like their politics. He doesn't say you have to like the color of their skin or their gender or anything else. It just says you love your neighbor. And every human being in this world is your neighbor, and you are to help them regardless.
This is Pete from Indian Shores. An FBI investigation. At this point, I have to ask myself, what are the political parties each agent is affiliated with? Will they be performing non-biased interviews? This country is getting split more and more in this land of trust no one.
Well, actually, four listener comments from last Friday's show. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Thanks to Carmeta from Tampa, who made a contribution online to support sustainable living and alternative health. We're going to open up the phone lines later on in the program, but first up today, we're going to hear from four local college students, and we're going to talk with them about politics. It's from Florida This Week, from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests were students from the University of South Florida, a student from the University of Tampa, one student from St. Petersburg College, and one student from New College in Sarasota. Coming up next, with the election less than 6 weeks away, and with more and more young people registering to vote, if they turn out this November, young people could have a major impact on the outcome. We're going to hear from members of the younger generation on the issues and the candidates next on a special edition of Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lurie.
Welcome back.
Millennials are on the cusp of surpassing baby boomers as the nation's largest living adult generation, according to population projections from the Census Bureau. As of July of 2016, millennials, whom we define as ages 22 to 37, numbered 71 million. And boomers, ages 54 to 72, numbered 74 million. Millennials are expected to overtake those boomers in population in 2019 as their numbers swelled to 73 million and boomers declined to 72 million. Generation X, ages 38 to 53, they're projected to pass the boomers in population by the year 2028. We're going to talk right now with some members of the newest generation, even newer than millennials, they're Generation Z. This week, our panelists are Ida Vasquez Soto is a third-year student at the University of South Florida, majoring in economics and political science. She's the opinion editor for her school newspaper, The Oracle. Travis Politakis is a freshman at the University of Tampa. He's majoring in journalism. He writes for the school newspaper, The Minaret, and most recently published an article about Colin Kaepernick signing with Nike. Malik Ferret will graduate from St. Petersburg College this year and plans to transfer to a university to study journalism. She writes for SPC's blog pages and occasionally the school's staff newspaper. And Eva Ernst is in her last year of studying public policy / French studies at New College in Sarasota. She's on the student government board, is also the co-president of the College Democrats chapter there. Well, welcome. Great to see you. Well, let me ask you a question. It's on everybody's mind right now, and that is the hearings this week over the Supreme Court nomination of Judge Kavanaugh. There is some very powerful testimony from Dr. Ford, powerful testimony from Judge Kavanaugh. Who do you think was right? Who was telling the truth, do you think? Do you think both of them were telling the truth? Do you think neither of them, or one or the other? Ida, let's start with you.
I think we don't know what happened. Let's start from yesterday. The hearings were powerful, the testimony was emotional, and what Dr. Ford and Brett Kavanaugh have been put through in the last 2 weeks since the allegations came forward, no one should ever have to deal with that, right? Mm-hmm. Death threats, your family being attacked. There were three Republican senators that were doxxed in the midst of the hearings, and their personal addresses were made public. This has become way too partisan and too political. But speaking to the allegations themselves, I don't think we know what happened. I think we have an unsubstantiated claim. We don't have witnesses. We don't have physical evidence. We don't know that Brett Kavanaugh didn't do this, but we also don't know that he did.
Mm-hmm. Malik, what do you think about the hearings?
To piggyback off of what she said, I just want to say, without the completion of an FBI investigation, we really don't know what happened. And both testimonies were highly and emotionally charged. And so, in my opinion, that leads me to believe that something did happen to Dr. Ford. We just don't know who was involved. We don't know for sure who was involved or what exactly happened. Based on her testimony, I'll support her claims. But until the investigation is complete, I think it's unfair to just say who's right and who's wrong and who's being honest here.
Eva, do you think that young people are more sensitive to Dr. Ford than they might be to Judge Kavanaugh, or based on the allegations?
I think that's an interesting question, especially when you think about how often college students have to discuss or think about, or even as a woman, how often do I have to talk or think about issues relating to sexual assault? And I think it's far more frequently than some people realize. And if you look back to the time period when this case was originally said to occur in the 80s, you have movies like Revenge of the Nerds coming out, where they were legitimizing and socializing a lot of behavior that we would find unacceptable today. So I don't think that necessarily Kavanaugh may realize that he did something wrong. And of course, we have to remember, like they said, this is a hearing, it's not a trial. So we're not looking to find a definitive answer necessarily, it's a job interview. Mm-hmm. And it still says a lot about somebody's character. That's why this was brought up. I think it's relevant. But at the same time, there's no presumption of innocence. This is not a case where someone is innocent until proven guilty. So struggling to try and find who we believe is not really the point of this sort of investigation. And I think that the fact that this investigation is actually going to go through is very interesting. I know this is very current news. But I think what a lot of people were worried about with Kavanaugh was the fact that he was not speaking about the potential of there being an FBI investigation. I think it could have cut down on a lot of the drama. It could have resolved a lot of issues. And to correct something that you said, there was a witness. And Dr. Ford and her lawyers actually asked that Mike Judge be present to give testimony. And the people at the hearing actually decided not to bring Mike Judge in, even though he was willing to testify. So there's a lot of information that we're missing. And I think it does make a lot of people conflicted. And it's highly it's highly broadcast, and it is affecting these people's personal lives.
And you,
it is.
So you agree with Malik? So you're all for the FBI investigation?
I'm very much for the FBI investigation.
And Ida, do you agree FBI investigation good, or what do you think?
So I think in less polarizing times, an investigation would be perfect, right? But we don't live in that time. So this was the example that I'm using, right? So Judge Gorsuch was confirmed with fewer than 60 votes. Judge Gorsuch is now sitting on the Supreme Court. Some of his compatriots or companions on the court, Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, were confirmed with over 60 votes each. And Justice Ginsburg, who sits on the court, was confirmed with over 90 votes to the Supreme Court. We don't live in a time anymore where we can count on Democrats and Republicans coming together to vote on a Supreme Court justice based solely on their credentials. We live in a time where we have to look at the midterms because we don't know who's going to have a majority in the Senate.
Travis, I want to ask you about this idea that boys will be boys. I think some past generations think that the kind of behavior that is alleged by Judge Kavanaugh was in the 80s or 70s was boys would be boys. That's what they did back then. And you hear that sometimes on some radio and TV stations. Do you think the current generation, what does the current generation think about that kind of alleged behavior? We're not taking sides whether or not Judge Kavanaugh did it, but about the behavior itself. What do you think your generation thinks about that?
I think our generation is very aware of that, and I think there needs to be accountability on me as a guy. We need to be accountable in the way we treat women with respect, and even like when we're at parties, we have to be aware of what's going on. And you see that kind of stuff happen more and more nowadays, which really is sad because men need to be more accountable, especially college kids.
So that's where you think college kids are at these days?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you a series of questions that you can really answer yes or no to, and I want to get your reaction. These are some of the big issues in the news. First of all, do you think abortion should be illegal in the U.S.? Raise your hand if you think it should be. Okay. In recent years, we've seen the tax cuts passed by Congress and signed by President Trump. Have those tax cuts made the economy better for all Americans? Raise your hand if you think they have. Okay. Racism and gender discrimination is still a problem in the U.S. Raise your hand if you think it is. Okay. We need to sharply limit immigration to the U.S. Raise your hand if you think that's true. None of you agree on that. Why?
I want to speak on this one. I think immigration does have aggregate positive effects, right? If we think of people as a free market, right, people should be able to go to the places where they can be most efficient with their skills and their talents. And sometimes that is in the United States. I do think that we need to restrict entrance at the border, which is a different circumstance than people applying for a visa. I also think that we really do need to depoliticize immigration as an issue, and we need to make sure that our immigration system actually functions.
But what do you make of the Republican Party these days? It's a hot button issue for many grassroots Republican voters, for the core of the Republican Party.
Well, so I know
that they don't like immigration.
So I know that it was a really key issue in the Republican primary between Adam Putnam and Ron DeSantis.
Right.
Ron DeSantis was a big fan of E-Verify, and Adam Putnam, not so much. But the problem is that even something like E-Verify isn't actually an effective way of tracking who's in Florida, who's working, right? E-Verify just confirms that you have a name and it matches the papers that you gave to your employer. It doesn't actually confirm that that is your name and that that is your Social Security number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what do you think about millennials and people that are a little bit older than you? Do you think generally that they're not as hard line on immigration as some of the older generations are?
I think that we've definitely seen a little bit more open-mindedness in some of the newer generations. I think that most people aren't aware that immigration politics is sort of a cyclical issue that keeps coming up in American history. We talk about immigration from China and how that was handled by the U.S. government, and it was highly political at the time as well.
The Chinese Exclusion
Exactly.
Act of the late 1800s.
And it just keeps coming up in waves, and people sort of start to forget that. And I think what we're having here right now is a problem with the vocabulary that we're using for individuals who want to come into our country. There's a refugee problem coming in from Central America. It's not just from Mexico. A lot of people are actually moving into Mexico. And immigration to the U.S. is at a record low right now. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of the issues that we're having are some of the information that's being disseminated to people. People aren't super aware of the actual statistics that are going into it, and they're not realizing that these people would not be putting their children's lives in danger unless it was absolutely necessary to get them out of the situation that they are dealing with at home.
I also wanted to say that I think that, and I'm going to say this based on my circle and the people that I've been around and just hearing conversations, I think that right now we're talking about immigration, just general immigration, but beyond that, what's really popular in conversation right now is illegal immigration, and I think that I've seen in my circle there's a 50-50% split on, well, certain people need to be completely barred from entering the United States, when, in my opinion, I think it's more of a regulation problem. And like she just mentioned, dealing with how are we going to handle the refugee crisis? How are we going to handle those who are still trickling into the United States illegally versus those who are trying to do it in the right way? I just think that among, and again, this is my opinion, I think that among our generation, very few of us are actually paying attention to the key issues that are current and that need to be fixed immediately.
Yeah.
When it comes to immigration.
Let me move on and just ask you a few more questions. One is socialism. Socialism has come up. Some of the Democratic candidates, especially Andrew Gillum, is accused of being a socialist. Bernie Sanders, I think, embraces this idea of democratic socialism. Raise your hand if you think that socialism is bad in all or most cases.
Yeah.
You're on the fence. And Eva, you don't think it's bad in all or most cases?
I don't think it's bad.
Okay. Why don't you think it's bad in all or most cases?
Well, I think that there's an issue here conflating socialism with communism, and it's a highly, again, it's an issue of vocabulary. A lot of, my family members, older generations, are scared when they hear who I'm voting for. They think that I'm a socialist. But if you look to the general conception of socialism, we've had socialist ideology in the United States before with the New Deal. I mean, it's the creation of a society that helps create basically sort of a welfare state, which is not a bad thing. You know, we want to be able to give back to the people in this country that are, they're paying taxes to be here. We want to give them government programs so that they're able to survive in this country, because we have a system that systemically oppresses people who are born in a situation where they are poor or lower middle class, and it's a continuous cycle. And there are ways to fix that and implement socialism in certain aspects that aren't going to totally upend our society and change everything that we stand for.
Ida, you're thinking about going to the London School of Economics and also maybe the University of Chicago, the Chicago School, very conservative. What do you think about what Eva said?
Well, I would say that the London School of Economics and the University of Chicago are more libertarian than anything else. But the first thing I would say is my biggest issue with socialism as an idea. First, actually, let's take a step back. You're right, I do think a lot of people conflate it with communism, but I've never seen a communist get more angry than to be called a socialist, actually. it's insane. They really hate being called socialists, and a lot of them are actually really, really frustrated with Gillum because they think he's taking a step back from a lot of the rhetoric he ran on to get it through the primary, right? So he's not using universal healthcare anymore. He's using affordable healthcare now, right? He's not using universal housing anymore. He's using affordable housing, those kinds of changes in rhetoric. And the biggest issue with socialism as a concept, right? The idea with socialism is that we redistribute from a tax base, right? To create social programs. And I have a fundamental issue with why should I pay the government to do with my money what I think I can do better?
Well, therein lies the issue for me when it comes to, and this is why I was like half up, half down, because to get to the basics of what socialism is versus capitalism, a lot of what America is built on has to do with capitalism. And when you talk about implementing a complete society based off of socialism, you take away the benefits of those who are competitive versus those who just want everything to be for the greater good of everyone in America. You take away, like you said, the benefits of taxes. Who do those taxes benefit the most? We call them the rich and wealthy. They are some of the most competitive people in America, mm-hmm. right?
I don't believe that everyone who is extremely wealthy is necessarily competitive. A lot of people are born into that wealth. It's generational. And another issue is we're talking about taking care of other people. I have no problem paying more money in taxes so that other individuals in my society, so that we can all move up together. People can get better educations and we can have better research for our healthcare system. Like, it's not that hard of a concept for me as a humanitarian.
I want to get Travis in on this. Travis, yeah. Let me ask you real quickly. Bernie Sanders, sometimes called a socialist, Andrew Gillum, sometimes has what people call socialist policies. Do you think that young people would be deterred from voting? Would they be voting against them or for them based on their left-leaning economic philosophy?
It's kind of a hard answer. I think with the people I've been around, I think they would be voting for them just because socialism, how I view it economically, is it like prevents like market failure. And a lot of my friends, they're like super scared about like where their money's gonna be and stuff. So I think that's one reason why socially they're gonna.
Do you all think you're gonna be better off than your parents? Do you think that the economy's gonna be better for you than it has been for your parents?
I think yes.
Yes, you think it's?
That's a huge possibility.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hard question because it depends on the cyclical nature of our economy and, you know, where in that sort of cycle we're going to fall. Mm-hmm. But I hope so. Yeah, I hope that I'll be in better.
You think it's, you're good, you're pretty optimistic too, Travis.
Yes, all right. One thing that kind of was the answer for me was during my parents in about 2008 when the housing market collapsed. I think our economy is good enough to where I don't think that will happen again. So that's one reason why I think I'll be better off.
You think it's going to be better? You're pretty confident about the economy.
I'm confident about me personally ending up better than my parents. Both my parents were immigrants to this country, and they did have college education, but college education from another country isn't the same as a domestic degree from this country. Yeah. And as far as going to job opportunities, as far as getting internships, as far as getting experience, I'll have all of that at a much younger age.
Okay, let me ask you another question. Governor Rick Scott, has Governor Rick Scott been good on the environment? If you think he's been good on the environment, raise your hand. No, none of you, even our libertarian and conservative.
I think I can speak to that one,
okay,
too. Just looking at the way that voters voted in the Senate primary between Rocky and Rick Scott, consider this, Rocky didn't spend any money on advertising. He's a no-name candidate.
This is another Republican who was running against Governor Scott.
Exactly.
Okay.
And in counties that were most affected by the algae blooms and the red tide, this candidate pulled out 20% against Rick Scott, an incumbent governor.
And a lot of those were Republican counties in Southwest Florida.
Well, it's a Republican primary, so
yeah.
This was Republicans voting against probably the most recognizable Republican in the state of Florida.
But these were the counties where Governor Scott should have done the best, and Rocky got a lot of votes in those counties. Yeah.
Exactly.
Let me ask you another question. Climate change is caused by humans. If you agree with that, raise your hand. On the fence and three. Okay. Do you think climate change is a problem that politicians are ignoring? Do you think that the current crop of politicians is taking it seriously? And then Ida, I'll get to you on the fence. But
yeah, I don't think that they're ignoring it at all. I think they're taking pretty hard line positions on it. I mean, we have congressmen bringing snowballs into the Congress floor or the Senate floor trying to prove that climate change isn't real. I think there's just a big information gap about what climate change entails. I think people are really paying attention to negative externalities and sort of finding ways to tax companies on the negative externalities that they put out into the environment that are having harmful effects on certain populations. And I just find it so fascinating how Donald Trump wants to bring back carbon.
Malik, what do you think about climate
change?
I was just going to say, I don't think it's an issue of them ignoring it. I just think that right now, other things are taking priority over that being an issue, which in my opinion is understandable, but at the end of the day, we are living in the climate.
Well, like, your family's from the Caribbean.
Yes.
Are people on Caribbean islands worried about sea level rise?
Well, the island that I'm from is below sea level, so you can say that. You can say that, but again, it comes with information and how much information and education is available when it comes to, not saying that it's not available where I'm from, but not a lot of emphasis is put on it.
Okay.
And I think that's the issue.
Heidi, you're on the fence. Why?
So I think climate change is real. Let me start with that like premise, right? I do think that there is a factor to that, that like there's a cyclical factor to it, right? The same way with our economy, there are cyclical factors, but then there are also factors that can be influenced a little bit by policy. I think that humans do have an impact on the environment, and I don't think that politicians are ignoring it, but I think that we're going at it the wrong way. We shouldn't be regulating ourselves into greener solutions. I mean, look at the uproar that happened over plastic straws versus paper straws. My school, all of the plastic straws have been phased out. We're all on paper straws now. And that was a private company, Aramark, deciding to go ahead and switch over to paper straws because it was socially irresponsible. It was socially negative for them to continue with the plastic straws.
What do you think about that idea? Let companies decide.
That's a problem that I have also with social media right now. They're taking issues like plastic straws and harnessing all the attention on things that individual people can do to make a difference. And it does make people feel powerful. I can take plastic straws out of my life. But the issue is the people that are causing most of these major negative externalities are the companies. So we don't need to be charging individual people with taking something as small as plastic straws out of their daily life. We need to be looking at what companies are doing to create waste and how they're affecting the environment, because it's on a far greater scale on that level.
I hate to rush you through, but we're almost out of time. I want to ask you a bunch more questions. One is, are you going to vote in November? Travis, are you going to vote? And are your friends going to vote in November?
I'm from out of state, so I still have to register, but I do plan on voting. And yeah, my friends plan on voting too.
Uh-huh. And Eva, what about you?
Yes, I definitely plan on voting. We're a very political campus. I think most new college students are going to be voting.
Okay, all right. And Malik, what about you?
Well, as an international student, I can't vote, but I know that a lot of my peers are planning to get out there and vote.
All right, and that's at St. Pete College?
Yes.
All right. And Ida, how about you?
I'm planning on voting.
Yeah.
I might not vote on every line, but I definitely want to make sure that I especially hit the amendments and I especially hit the tax referendums that are going to be in Hillsborough County.
Do young people read newspapers? Do they pay attention to the news? What news sources do you trust? And Travis, can I start with you? Do you read a daily newspaper, or do you get your news online? Where do you get your news from, and who do you trust the most?
I usually just get my news from online sources, from Fox to CNN. I usually tend to go to Fox more, no particular reason, but...
Do your parents watch Fox?
Sometimes, yeah.
Uh-huh. Eva, how about you?
I tend to listen to the BBC, the news network. I also listen to CNN, and sometimes...
You read a newspaper?
I used to read the New York Times when it was available to us, yeah. But it's hard to get my hands on an actual newspaper.
Ida, let me go to you next on this one. Who do you trust for news sources, and what do you continue to rely on?
So, I'm picky about trusting any single source. I don't actually trust Fox or CNN, especially not from what I saw during the primary. I try to get an aggregate of sources, so I read a lot of the papers that are all across the state of Florida, the Sun Sentinel, Tampa Bay Times, mm-hmm. Miami Herald. Some of that is just a product of the work that I do, but also like it helps me get a better idea of what's actually happening.
Malik, how about you? What news sources do you trust?
I guess we're standing on the same fence, because I prefer to get my sources from different angles and then decide for myself.
Let me ask you about guns. Do you think politicians have done enough to prevent gun violence around the state? Should they do more? Or do you think politicians are too pro-gun? Eva, do you want to start?
I think that the way that politicians have been going about this, they're taking very odd preventative measures to stop gun violence. They're focusing on the victims of gun violence and telling them that they're responsible for preventing their own deaths. When we need to look at the way that we treat gun registries in this country, we need to look at the weapons that we're allowing people access to, and look at the laws such as the Stand Your Ground laws that are creating these environments that are very contentious. So I think it's up to the politicians to take a look at gun control legislation.
We only have 10 seconds for everybody. Ida, what do you think about gun laws? Too strict or too lenient?
They're too restrictive.
Too restrictive?
It's the Second Amendment. You don't regulate any other right the same way that you regulate the Second Amendment, except for maybe screaming fire in a movie theater.
Okay, more freedom on guns. Malik, what about you?
I'm kind of... I think that we need to regulate more, focus more on how people are retaining the guns. So yes, more regulation.
All right. And Travis, what about you?
I don't think outlawing guns completely, but I do think there needs to be some restrictions and make it a little bit harder to obtain guns.
I wish we had more time. Thank you so much for joining the show. You've all been great, and you've really opened my eyes. Thanks a lot for coming. And Travis, Eva, Malik, Ida, thank you very much. And thank you for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
All right, so that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests were all members of Generation Z. Generally speaking, Generation Z is comprised of people born from the mid-1990s to the mid-2000s. And my guests on that program, starting with the last voice we heard, Travis Politakis is a freshman at the University of Tampa. And just before that, we heard from Malik Ferret. She's a graduate, or she will graduate soon, from St. Petersburg College. And then just before that, Ida Vasquez Soto. She's at the University of South Florida in Tampa. She's the opinion editor for the Oracle newspaper. And we heard from Eva Ernst. She is studying public policy at New College in Sarasota and will graduate this year. We got some comments about this show, about the Generation Z show, and I'll read some. Jimmy writes regarding immigration. He says, the Mexican people are well aware if they can make it to the U.S. border, past the U.S. border, the U.S. healthcare system will deliver their baby for free, get them on food assistance, set them up in low-income housing, offer free education to the children, all paid for by U.S. taxpayers, and these people put in nothing. You may complain about healthcare for citizens, yet we give it away to people who never paid into the system. That's Jimmy's email. And do you think it's correct that people who are undocumented immigrants get free food assistance, low-income housing assistance? Do you think that the healthcare system will help them beyond delivering the baby? That's Jimmy's email. Okay, so Jimmy, thanks a lot for your email. And disagreeing, I think, with people that think that we do not have an immigration problem. Adam sent this email in. He said, I heard the Republicans say we don't need socialism. We can do it better. Is she paving her own roads? If her house catches fire, surely she will not call the fire department and she will just put the fire out herself, right? We already have socialist ideas implemented and these people just don't seem to realize it. Also, that millennial who thinks the economy won't crash again is extremely naive. He better buckle up, writes Adam. Adam, thanks for your thoughts. And we're going to open up the phone lines right now and talk about this issue, and we can talk about other issues in the news, too. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. You're listening to 88.5 FM. And here's the phone number if you want to call and maybe comment about something that our guest said on Florida This Week. You can call up at 813-239-9663. That's actually the right number, 813-239-9663. And you can also email your comment into the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. That's dj@wmnf.org. I just want to read a few things before we start, a few news items. In Japan, very interesting event happened. Denny Tamaki was elected yesterday as the next governor of Okinawa, of the Okinawa Prefecture in Japan, after a campaign focused on sharply reducing the U.S. military presence on the island. Okinawa is home to about half the 54,000 U.S. troops stationed in Japan and houses the largest U.S. air base in the Asia-Pacific region. The U.S. military says its presence on the island is vital not only for the defense of Japan, but for also keeping peace in the entire region from Taiwan and China to the Korean Peninsula and down to the Philippines. But Okinawans feel their small island bears an unfair burden of U.S. military presence. They complain about the noise of low-flying aircraft and the dangers of accidents, as well as crimes committed over the years by members of the U.S. military. Tamaki is the son of an Okinawan waitress and an American Marine whom he has never met. He says that will stand him in good stead as he tries to negotiate with Washington as well as with Tokyo. So the new head of Okinawa, the new governor of Okinawa, campaigned on sharply reducing the U.S. military presence on that island. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Just a few items about Judge Kavanaugh. The White House pushed back Sunday against reports that the Trump administration set the ground rules for a brief FBI investigation into Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. President Trump ordered the investigation on Friday into the sexual assault allegations against Kavanaugh after a request by Senate Republicans, a striking turnabout for a nominee the party had hoped would be confirmed by early this week. The investigation, though, will be limited in scope in ways determined by the White House, a person familiar with the proceedings said Saturday. That includes not following up on claims of sexual misconduct by Kavanaugh from a third woman. The nominee's alcohol use may also be off limits. Not true, White House senior counsel Kellyanne Conway said, though, to that report. The White House is not getting involved in the FBI investigation in that way, she said on CNN's State of the Union yesterday. She went on to say the president very much respects the independence of the FBI. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, said on Fox News Sunday that the White House is not micromanaging this process. And there's several stories out today about this, but I'll just read one. A Yale classmate says that Kavanaugh lied. A Yale classmate of Judge Brett Kavanaugh accused him Sunday of a blatant mischaracterization of his drinking while he was in college, saying that he often saw Kavanaugh staggering from alcohol consumption. The classmate's name is Chad Luddington. Luddington is now a professor at North Carolina State University. He said he frequently socialized with Kavanaugh as a student. In a statement, he said that the judge had been untruthful in testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee when he had denied any possibility that he had ever blacked out from drinking. Luddington said that Kavanaugh had played down the degree and frequency of his drinking and that the judge had often become belligerent and aggressive while intoxicated. Luddington, who appears to have made small political contributions to Democratic candidates, said to the New York Times on Sunday that he was told by the FBI's Washington, D.C. field office that he should go to the Bureau's Raleigh, North Carolina office today. It was unclear whether the FBI would add Luddington's accusations to the newly reopened background investigation. Well, let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. This is Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lurie, and thanks a lot for tuning in. And let's see what's on the minds of our listeners. We're going to go to John in Port Richey. John, you're on WMNF. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks, Rob. First, an observation. I thought it was one of the fundamental pillars of conservatism is to have less federal government, more states' rights, and more states' control. So I'm a little confused about what's going on in California with the net neutrality law that they passed, that the federal government is going to come in and squash that. So I'm kind of like, I don't quite understand that. Isn't that the more federal government stepping on states' rights? I guess it comes to that ideology when the states are doing what the conservatives want and not what they don't want. That's about the only thing I can come up with why they're trying to squash the states' rights there. Second thing about your topic today, one of the guests was talking about capitalism and being a force for, what they say, competitiveness, which I've heard that, you know, capitalism has to be there for innovativeness and all this stuff, that you can't have this with socialism. First of all, I'd just like to point out the turn of the last century, the 1900s. That was just pure unadulterated capitalism with very little regulation and no income tax. So who benefited from that when you look at that time period? I would argue that it was the industrialists, that the workers really didn't benefit. They were actually sharing beds by the shifts. So there was no worker rights, no vacation, no pay, no health care, no safe working conditions. Under pure, or at least that time, I'd say probably the closest to capitalism we've had. And the other thing about the competitiveness, look at Michael Faraday. He was a poor child from a low income that was taken in by someone who had the resources to do that, to give him the education to go on and do what he did. And he invented the modern, he invented the motors, the electrical motors, and did a lot of work with electrical magnetic fields, if people aren't familiar with Michael Faraday. That is the foundation basis of our society today. And the other thing I'd like to point out is go back and look at Bell Labs. The federal government gave Bell Labs a monopoly on the telephone system with the condition that their lab could do whatever they wanted, but whatever they came up with or invented that did not have anything to do directly with the communication, they had to give that to the public at large. And the guy who started Texas Instrument, there was a guy there at Bell Lab that came up with the resistor just because he could. There was no market value in it. There was no profitability in it. He just did it because he was interested in doing that. So that little transistor they put out on the open market and had seminars for people to come in to learn what it is, to learn how to use it. And a guy went out and created the company called Texas Instrument. So this concept of you can only have capitalism to initiate innovation or to spark competition, I think is just a bunch of BS. Imagine how many people out there that are at low income that could do better if they had the resources.
All right, John, thanks a lot. A lot there, like five or six different topics. On the panel, I think it's fair to say that one of the panelists thought that socialism was bad in all cases. Three of the panelists, I think, were not in agreement with that statement. And by the way, you can see the show online. You can go to wedu.org/FTW for Florida This Week and watch the panelists as they raise their hands to answer some of those questions. John's right. I mean, I think the conservative philosophy is that the states should be the place where new ideas are experimented on, and if it works in the state, then you take it, you expand it and put it in operation in more states. The controversy that John mentioned was that California Governor Jerry Brown signed into law yesterday a bill to restore net neutrality protections that President Trump's Federal Communications Commission killed late last year. The new law prohibits Internet service providers, or ISPs, from blocking or slowing access to legal online content, demanding special fees from websites to prioritize their traffic, or it also bans charging customers for special exemptions to caps on their data use. Brown signed the measure without comment, setting up an almost certain showdown with both the ISPs and the FCC, which barred states from setting their own rules in its repeal last December of protections instituted during the administration of President Obama. And the Justice Department quickly filed a federal action in U.S. District Court in Sacramento to block the new law last night. In a statement, the Attorney General Jeff Sessions said, under the Constitution, states do not regulate interstate commerce. The federal government does. Once again, California legislature has enacted an extreme and illegal state law attempting to frustrate federal policy. So you could look at it that way, that the federal government should regulate interstate commerce, or you could look at it the way that Governor Brown and the legislature in California look at it, and that is that he's protecting the people of California from unfair business practices by Internet service providers. The Internet service providers, angry at California and Governor Brown, should the states be allowed to experiment and see if their methods are the right ones? Our phone number here at WMNF, 813-239-9663. And again, our fund drive starts on Thursday, and you can make the fund drive go faster if you make a contribution ahead of time online. Best place to make a contribution is go to WMNF.org and make your contribution right there online, and you'll be able to figure out how to do that just by going to our website. Let's go to Antonio in Bradenton. Hi, Antonio. You're on WMNF.
I don't think he's taking my call. Rob, real quick, when the lady said that like firemen and firefighters were part of socialism, didn't you yourself have a show where the lady was describing on how all that stuff is privatized now and people were being broke because they couldn't afford to pay the bill from the firefighters putting out the fire? And don't we get, and like when you don't pay that ECS, like when the ambulance comes, and the fire department comes, you know, for the, you know, in case a person needs help or whatnot. Don't people get like collect? Doesn't that stuff get sent to the collection services if you don't pay it? Isn't that private?
Yeah, you know, firefighters are not privatized, as far as I know. I think there there may be times where EMS comes to your house, and yes, you have to pay a fee in order to get transported to the hospital. But if a firefighter comes to your house right now, as far as I know, there's no fee for that. That county forces on you, or that city forces on you, to pay to fight the fire that protects your house or saves your house. So no, I don't think most fire departments have been privatized.
But the ambulance side of it is.
Ambulance side of it has pretty much been privatized. I think that's true.
I mean, it'll be interesting to have a show on all the stuff that are being privatized across the country. Because I even think. Like parking meters and stuff, I don't think the city owns that. I think all that stuff is privatized. The same thing with parking lots and whatnot. And one more point I wanted to mention out that it would surprise me if Kavanaugh was not confirmed. If he was not confirmed, that would be surprising. As far as I can tell, the way politics goes in this country, I think that guy's going to get confirmed.
All There's right.
nothing we can do
okay.
about it.
Thanks for the prediction, Antonio. All right, and we could talk about all of those issues. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and you're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Let's go to Bob in Tampa. Hey, Bob, you're on. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
I was over in Okinawa, 62 and 63. They would have no economy whatsoever without the U.S. military there. The only work they had was the Orion Beer Factory. Everything else was restaurants, pawn shops, bars, and trinket shops. There was nothing else there.
What do you think now, though? I mean, with Japan being
I'm
a pretty
sure now, but
world powerhouse economy.
68 miles long from end to end, the main island, and it's 12 miles wide.
Yeah, but this new mayor, I mean, this new governor, rather, of the prefecture, that was his campaign. He said we wanted to remove the U.S. troops from Okinawa. That was what he campaigned on.
Well,
so the people of Okinawa must want it.
How, because, I mean, the military is what supports that whole place.
Okay, well, that was back in 62, 63.
Yeah, well,
Japan's economy has recovered a whole lot since then.
Lately should call in.
All right, Bob, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right. So here's our phone number again, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Francesco in Sarasota. Hi, Francesco. You're on WMNF.
Yeah. Hi, Rob. I just want to tell you I love your show.
Thank you.
I love all the shows on really, NPR, and I'll be making a contribution very shortly. I just want to say, you know, that I lived in Europe for 3 years, and I was in every country because I was traveling in the music. I was in several bands. And this idea that, I don't know where socialism gets, it's such a bad word, you know? I mean, within the word is society. The emphasis is on society, where in capitalism, the emphasis is on capital. So everything is related to money and what's, you know, so what the goal is for everybody to make as much money as possible rather than the emphasis being on the society. But when I was there, to my eye, and I was pretty conscious of what was going on, the educational system seemed, in terms of everybody, seemed better. The healthcare system, I got sick while I was there. I went to a hospital. I wasn't interrogated about all sorts of insurance forms. The happiness quotient, if you look through the countries of Western Europe, they have a higher happiness quotient. Every one of them does compared to the United States. They live longer. So, you know, I don't know, this idea that socialism is this terrible word, I really never understood it after living in Europe for 3 years. I came back and I never understood. Now I know you're going to get a call that says, "Well, then why does he live here?" Well, my family was born in New York. I started my career in New York, et cetera, et cetera. It's not that easy to just, you know, be someplace else so far away. I have a son, et cetera. But as far as socialism being this terrible monster that people talk about, oh, you know, if you call the socialist that. You know, the kiss of death. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Well, you know, I think it all comes down to what is the definition of socialism? I mean, Democrats have been branded as socialists for the last 15 or 20 years by Republicans, and Republicans say that everything Democrats do is socialist. And then the frequently what Republicans will say is that socialism is what's happening right now in Venezuela. They never point to Western Europe or Scandinavia as an example of socialism,
right.
Even though in right. Scandinavia, as you point out, and Western Europe, a lot of times, education, healthcare, sometimes housing is socialized to some degree. I mean, there are limits on rent. Rent control might be considered socialistic, but you know, I think we've all got to come up with a definition of what is socialism. Is it Venezuela? Is it Scandinavia? Is it England? What is socialism? And
and
do we already have some socialism here in the U.S.? I mean, somebody just sent me this message from NPR. NPR reported back in 2010 that there was a town in Tennessee, the South Fulton City Fire Department. Didn't put out a fire because somebody, the Kranich family, did not pay their $75 fire service subscription fee. So, and I haven't read the whole article, so I don't know if it's a privatized fire department or not. But here in the U.S., we have degrees of socialism already. The public education system is socialized. That is, that you and I and everybody else, we all pay our property taxes, we pay a sales tax, and the government combines all that money that we put into it. And then it provides for us thousands of schools across the state of Florida, hires tens of thousands of teachers, and educates millions of kids every year with the money that we collectively put in. And that, I think, by any definition, that would be socialism. Does it work? Yeah. Well, some of the top schools in the state are right here in the Tampa Bay area, and for instance, Plant High School, one of the best high schools in the state, and it is a public high school. So does it work? Yeah, especially if the parents are well off. Are there problems? Yeah, in South St. Petersburg, there are problems, but five schools are struggling to make it back. But I think, there are degrees of socialism everywhere. The university system that we have in Florida, it does cost a lot of money to attend the state university, but it's cheaper to attend USF than it is to attend Harvard or BU or the University of Pennsylvania, because the state subsidizes part of that cost. And for some students here in Florida, if you're a Bright Futures student, you get a free ride. If you get good grades while you're in high school and then go to UF or Tallahassee. So there is, and there's case after case after case where we pull our money collectively and we pay for things that we all use for free, like the interstate highway system. So we have a degree already of socialism in the U.S. The question, I think, is how much do we want? How much is appropriate?
Yeah, well, I'll say one thing. Look, every system of government has its problems. And, you can always point to a problem there, or somebody waits for health care in England or whatever it is. But I, in my opinion, this sort of Darwinistic capitalism that we seem to be headed for, or seem to be, speaking for, I just think that's immoral. I think it's unhealthy, and I don't think it will work long term.
All right. Francesco, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to Betty in Sarasota. Betty, you're on WMNF.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. Great. How are you?
So, of course. As you know, you might recall, I'm from Canada. And you know what? I think that so many words that are used in society are shaped by who's at the top at any given time. If it was Obama or if it's Trump, whoever is in the position of power has the option to shape our minds as to what's appropriate, what's right, what's wrong. And we know with this fake news society, of course they're going to say socialism is akin to communism, when in fact that's ridiculous. Socialism really, bottom line, means one for all and all for one, so that no one gets too wealthy at the cost of people at the bottom who are going to be terribly poor.
And in Canada, you have a degree of socialism, especially when it comes to health care. Your insurance companies are socialized.
Absolutely.
absolutely. That's why doctors complain, because they don't make nearly as much as they do here, but they still make a great wage. It's just that it's more equalized among the people and the wealthy. So, you know, the poor have many more benefits. My brother has emotional problems, and he's never really been in the workforce. He just couldn't handle it. And to this day, he gets $1,600 a month, which is more than I'm getting from my Social Security. So there you have it. And
all right.
So people at the bottom are taken care of throughout Europe and indeed Canada, even Costa Rica.
All right, Betty, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
All right. Stay tuned. Sean Canan is coming up next with a great Midpoint program. I always try to figure out what should be the song of the week. And after watching the Kavanaugh hearings last week and watching SNL on Friday night, I was trying to figure out what would be the song of the week. And this song just kind of jumped out at me. It's from a commercial. After watching SNL on Saturday night and watching the Kavanaugh hearings, that song just kind of leapt to mind. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm Rob Lori. This is WMNF Tampa. Stay-